on today's show, what would a title mean for Jokic? Which Nuggets have the best opportunity in the finals? Talk about that and more on today's Locked On NBA. Let's go.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome. You are Locked On to the NBA. My name is Nick Engsted, host of the Locked On Mavericks podcast. Thanks for being part of the show, making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Be an everydayer. Subscribe or follow for free. Just search Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. But the best way you can help us grow the show is to listen every day and to comment anything below. Let us know in the comment section, what would a title mean for Nikola Jokic? We're going to ask that today. And joining me, as always on a Thursday, host of Locked On Bulls, what you got for me, Pat the Designer?
There's no basketball tonight.
I don't know what to do.
Darn you, LeBron.
Ugh.
Or Anthony Davis, realistically.
I mean. Or D'Angelo Russell. Or I mean,
but, you can. D'Lo kind of played like D'Lo. We saw that one coming. I'm not going to lie.
Blame anybody for not having basketball tonight. But since we don't have basketball, we'll look forward. We'll look forward to what the Nuggets could do in the finals. We'll talk about a little bit of a preview of what we expect from them in the finals coming up, even though we don't know who they're going to play against, even though it could be the Heat. We could know by the end of Thursday night. We'll also do Count It Up, where we talk about the most interesting, fun things in the NBA, including Melo's retirement, LeBron James hinting at retirement, and Mark Jackson on the ESPN broadcast. So we'll talk about all that coming up. But let's start with this here today, Pat. I want to ask the question, what would an NBA title mean for Nikola Jokic?
It solidifies him as one of the greatest centers of all time. No, it's not even crazy to say that. It solidifies him as one of the greatest centers of all time. Now, listen, there's a lot of stats that have to come into that, but we put Bill Walton very high for doing this, being the focal point, being the leader, being the one that's driving you to the NBA Finals. I believe did Bill Walton make the top 75 still, or was he out? Was he on the outside? I don't remember if Bill Walton was inside or not, but I think that right when you talk about iconic players, you're talking about a multiple time MVP. You're talking about a guy that has now led his team to the NBA Finals. You're talking about a guy that realistically, no matter what team to me comes out of the Eastern Conference, has a really good chance at still winning that, because I think that Denver at this point has proven themselves as the better team, which is weird to say, I guess. They've been the best team in the NBA all year. And I will say this. They kind of feel like the new Spurs. They kind of feel like the new Spurs in the sense of, like, we didn't talk about them being here all season, even though they were the best team in the NBA all season. But I think that this would be something that is legacy cementing, especially with everything he's adding on. He definitely goes down as the most versatile center we've ever seen to win a championship.
Bill Walton did make the NBA 75 anniversary team. And Jokic, if he wins a title, puts him in a category like that, like you said. Yes. Two MVPs and like a finals MVP if he did win it, or even just a finals or a title where he's definitely the best player. Yeah. It puts him in a category that just is we don't have. And for a while in the NBA, since it felt like LeBron has kind of tailed off, we haven't had a who's the best player in the NBA, a definitive answer to that question. And I think we would have that if Jokic would go to win a title. And I think for a little bit after Giannis won that title, we put Giannis there. And I think Jokic would land at that point. And I think there would be some debate between him and Giannis, I think, still. I don't know if it's definitive that he would be the best player, but it does put him in a category where he's kind of untouchable by pretty much anybody else. There's not a debate where, all right, is it Luka? Is it Durant? Is it LeBron still? Is it Curry? Like, no, I think it's him and then probably Giannis and then no one else. Like, Embiid, no. He cleared Embiid in these playoffs. Like, come at me, Sixers fan. There's no debating that Jokic is a better player than Joel Embiid after watching these playoffs and what has transpired.
No, 100%. And I think here's the thing, right? When you talk about with Jokic's game, the one thing that we've always talked about with Jokic is he's been able to be stopped. Giannis wasn't able to be stopped, right? But you also have to look at the fact that Michael Porter Jr. missed time. Jamal Murray missed time. The one time that Jokic got a fully healthy team, or at least healthy for most of the season, right? They were the best team in the NBA, basically. And they ended up now in the NBA Finals. He just needed that little bit of help for him to get to that next level. And so I think that, right, like when I look at a Nikola Jokic and what he's doing right now, the question on who's the best player in the league to me isn't a question anymore when I look at a guy who, how are you going to stop him? That's the question about Giannis. Even with Giannis, right, Giannis is probably, I like how Shaq breaks it down. Shaq doesn't say he's the best center ever, but he does say he's the most dominant center ever. To me, that's kind of how Giannis feels in this NBA versus Jokic. I don't think that you can stop Giannis either. But what I do think is that with Jokic, he will affect the game in more ways than Giannis ever can. And to me, you have to consider him the best player in the NBA at that point, because how are you going to slow him down or stop him? Even if you stop him from scoring, he's going to get everybody else 15 points on the team.
I love that point, because I think another thing, if what would a title mean for Jokic? Not for him specifically, but I think for the NBA, if Jokic and this Nuggets team wins a title, I think it's a way that they're zigging when everyone else is zagging. In today's NBA, like, you look at the numbers, and one of the reasons why the offensive numbers are so inflated by so many like players is one, pace. Like, pace is a little bit up from like the early 2000s and 90s and all that. But you look at the percent, like the usage percentage of all the best players, you know, Westbrook, Harden, Luka, they're setting these records for usage percentage. Embiid, Giannis this year, we're all setting like records for usage percentage. And you have all these stars that are using up possessions more and more and more. It's like, all right, everything comes through me, and then I have to go get mine, and then everybody else can kind of feed off of that. Jokic is doing a different thing where he only scored 24 points a game, which seems like a lot, but it's not a lot in today's NBA anymore when you have like five players scoring 30 points a game. And so I wonder if you start to look at some of these players around the league, like Luka, like Embiid, where, okay, we can't just play through me and I can't just go get mine and everybody else has to figure it out. I gotta have to be more of a hub, and I have to be more of a, we share the ball a little bit more. The off-ball movement from the Nuggets, you're seeing cuts and stuff all over the place because Jokic is going to hit you. Now, maybe that's just a unique thing that he can do that no one else can, but maybe this promotes ball movement a little bit more that we've wanted in the NBA for a while. It is boring sometimes to watch the Luka-focused, just everybody stand around, the Harden, everybody stand around, and one guy just goes gets his own shot, and maybe this will like entice some other teams to try and do that.
I don't know, right? I don't know about that, just because
everybody looks at the title team and it's like, all right, how can we do that? Everybody looks at the Warriors and we're like, okay, how can we do that? Get shooters and get a really good defensive guy like a Draymond type. Everyone was looking for that. Well, everyone look for what the Nuggets are doing.
I think that, right, like we saw that though, right? Like everybody looked at Pop. We saw one other team that realistically kind of got close to what the Spurs were doing in that Atlanta team, and they got the doors blown off them by LeBron James. Right, like that it's harder to replicate that because you have to have five guys at once caring about the same thing. You really realistically have to have 15 guys at once caring about the same thing, and I think that that's a lot more scarce in today's NBA. It's funny because I was listening to, we talked about Paul George's podcast a lot. He's actually had really good guests on, and he talked about he had DeMar DeRozan on. And I've heard Pat Bev say this now, and DeMar said it, and Paul George said it. They said there's a solid 25% of the NBA that doesn't take the NBA seriously. They're just talented, and everybody tells them that they're nice. There's not that level of guys that wants to just go out there and win. The one thing that I saw from Jokic in that game was the pure adulation of, like, I don't care about this MVP. I'm going to the NBA Finals.
What does it mean to you? Nothing.
Nothing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to the NBA Finals, and you can see the joy. Like, that's something to me that we haven't seen in a long time, mostly because we haven't seen a new team in the finals for a while, right? Like, everybody's like, I got to act like I've been there before. Jokic hasn't been there before. So to see the hunger and the fight and him actually be able to get through, I thought that that was really cool to see in that game. And I think that that's why you see him there, because we have question marks about everybody else on the path that he took to get to the finals.
Underrated thing, what it would mean for Jokic is he would absolutely be the best second round pick of all time.
Is that even a question at this point? Who's competition?
Manu Ginobili?
No.
Two MVPs already clears him. Marc Gasol's another one. Jeff Hornacek. Draymond is up there.
No.
Kukoc.
Because leaders, the leader. Like, I've heard players talk about this. Reggie Miller's talked about this. Michael talked about this. The mantle of everything being on you at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Being able to win with that pressure on you is something different. Manu didn't have to face that. Kukoc didn't have to face that.
Draymond
doesn't have to. Draymond kind of has to face that, but he brings that on himself realistically, right? Like,
So you think he's already there? He's already the best second round pick of all time.
Yeah, that's not even a question to me. I'd have to go through the entire list, but
those are the names. I just looked up. Did you mention Andy Bailey earlier?
Relax.
I just brought up a Bleacher Report article from him about the best second round picks of all time, and this is a couple years ago. But Jokic was like four at that point, and now I'm pretty sure he's one. Draymond, and Manu are like the three.
That's your top three. And yeah, I mean, he's number one to me. Two MVPs. I mean, first off, if he wins this ring, there's the underrated story.
Okay.
The guy that wins this ring got drafted during a Quesarito commercial. There's your underrated story right there.
First guy to win NBA Finals MVP while being drafted during a burrito commercial.
I don't even think Taco Bell still has a Quesarito.
They got to bring it back. The Yokerito.
If Jokic wins, you got to market that. Taco Bell, we're giving you $1 million ideas.
The Yokerito? Something. The Jokerito?
That's pretty much how they make up the names for stuff at Taco Bell. So it would work. It'd be on par.
Coming up, let's look at the other Nuggets. Who has the best opportunity in the finals? Either to make money, make a name for themselves, step up, anything like that. We'll talk about the other Nuggets coming up. But before we do, let me tell you about eBay Motors. eBay Motors has you covered. Just like this Nuggets team fits so well, you need the best players to fit for a championship team. eBay Motors has you covered with the best car parts that fit your car just right. So the next time you need parts and accessories, head to eBay Motors. With eBay Guaranteed Fit, you can be sure that every part you need fits right the first time around. Just add your ride to My Garage and look for the green check to know that the part will fit or your money back, because just like in sports, confidence is the name of the game when you shop on eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts to choose from, you'll be back in the game in no time. After all, it's easy to bring home a win when the right parts are guaranteed. Get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices on ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. eBay Guaranteed Fit only available to U.S. customers. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us on Locked On NBA, making us your first listen. Subscribe to the show if you're not. We have a Locked On NBA show covering every single one of your favorite teams in the NBA, also NFL, MLB, and all that. Click the link in the description to find the show covering your team 5 days a week. I cover Locked On Mavs. Pat has Locked On Bulls 5 days a week throughout the offseason.
We are very depressed. You're more optimistic. You're more optimistic.
Kind of. The team has a top five player that just missed the playoffs.
But you got to pick.
I spent some of my podcast prep time today watching Kyrie Irving's IG live. So I'm not sure that we're not on the same level here when we're talking about depression.
It's weird because it's just like, that's actually tough. I'm one of the people, like, me and Hayes talked about, like, odd trades that could happen in the offseason, like if the Bulls blew it up and wanted to send the Mavs Zach LaVine. Watching IG Lives would not be a happy part of my day for me.
The day they traded for him, I put his Twitter and Instagram on alerts, and I was like, this is my life now. All right, let's talk about a team that's actually happy for the first time in the Denver Nuggets making the NBA Finals. Who has the best opportunity in this finals to take a step up? And I think this is a great opportunity for Jamal Murray. We're already seeing the type of player that he has been, and he is a playoff performer. And I think he can cement himself as like one of the best playoff performers in the NBA going right now. And honestly, he may be able to cement himself as the best player to never make an all-star or to not make an all-star team so far in this, if he has a really, really good, because he just averaged like 35 points a game in the Western Conference Finals, and not many people have ever done that. And he had that showdown with him and Donovan Mitchell where they were both going off for 40 and 50. I mean, he's just on it. He's been another level of playoff player, and he still hasn't made an all-star team or an all-NBA team yet. It's kind of wild.
Well, I mean, he hasn't been healthy enough to be in that position either. But I think that if he's able to stay healthy, I mean, listen, we know what Jamal Murray can do, and I feel like Mike Malone has really let Jamal Murray kind of go. He's allowing him to kind of become the player that we saw in that bubble, where the bubble was a weird situation where it was like, do whatever you want to do. Go out there. Like, it's the best hooping you're going to get.
Best shooting we've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. The pressure was completely different. I always go back to I don't remember who the rookie was, but I'll never forget this play, and it epitomized the bubble for me completely. Giannis comes down, dunks on this rookie. I mean, poster. It was supposed to be a home Milwaukee game. Comes down on the other end, knocks down a three the next play. I'm like, if that's in Milwaukee, he is crushed. His spirit is done. He's not coming back. But I like that Jamal Murray, you know, like he's bouncing back. He's proving a lot of right from the bubble. That's the thing about the bubble. We've seen two paths, right? TJ Warren was a dog.
Yep.
TJ Warren can't get on the court no more.
Well, he's hurt too, but yeah.
Get it together. But I think that, you know, like when I look at what Jamal Murray's done since his time in the bubble and when he's been able to get back on the court, Mike Malone kind of letting the reins off. I like that as well. I think that that's really helping him be able to go off. The player I would look at, y'all already know who I'm going to say. I'm a big guy. I'm a big fan of his ever since this man was 14 years old. That sounds crazy if it's not in the basketball sense. But anyway, Michael Porter Jr. Absolutely. Michael Porter Jr. for me is the guy, because realistically, right? Again, you saw him be able to go out there and score at will. There's some games in that Western Conference Finals where I think he had one game where he really struggled, but he was the bailout that everybody needed. When Jamal Murray needed that bailout guy, when Jokic needed that bailout guy, Michael Porter Jr. was the guy that was going to be able to show up. And teams just don't know how to defend him. He's 7 freaking feet tall. You're trying to close out on him, and he actually jumps on his jump shot. He is Kevin Durant, just not to that point yet. And I think that the finals is going to be the perfect time for him to start to make those strides towards that star player level, where he's going to be able to get a lot more offensive opportunities, mostly because who the heck's going to be guarding him? I mean, I guess if you get Boston right, you get Jason Tatum. But if you get Miami, Gabe Vincent?
That's not good, Caleb Martin. It's Max Caleb Strus,
Martin.
It's 6'6". Yeah, that's gonna be tough for them if it's Miami. Him and Aaron Gordon are like, watching those two. They're huge wings, like you said. It's just the opposite of what Miami.
Aaron
has.
Gordon, who led the Denver Nuggets to the finals per the Arizona State newspaper.
University of Arizona newspaper said that Aaron Gordon led them to the finals, which is hilarious.
I love it.
But watching those two guys, just such big wings, be able to do that. I think Aaron Gordon has something to prove in this and like finally become the epitome of what we expected from him coming out of the draft. When you looked at him, you're like, all right, this guy's probably not a star player, but he'd be an incredible complimentary player. Yes. And then in Orlando, they're like, you're our star. Remember that one summer that they were like, Aaron Gordon's adding stuff off the dribble. Like, we think he can be Paul George. And I was like, all right, let's calm down, Orlando.
Spent that whole season dunking.
And then he just kept dunking. But now he's in the perfect spot for him. Next to a center that can shoot. A center that can find him and can hit him on those lob passes. He can play defense against anybody, really. And he doesn't have to guard like smaller guards because they have a couple that can do that. Like, he's just in the perfect spot for him. And I think he can finally like fulfill what we expected from him when he got drafted in Orlando.
Yeah, Aaron Gordon gets me excited. And I think the sad part is, right, like, there are people. I mean, there are people who still look at Aaron Gordon as the dunker. And realistically, hasn't been in his time since his time in Denver. Like, I mean, I've watched Aaron Gordon in Denver have to be the number one guy in situations where Jokic was down and he was the only one able to go. I watched Aaron Gordon be the number two guy when nobody else was there. And catch a lot of that flack, right? For being the number two guy that's not able to perform enough. But now there's just so many options on this Denver team. Aaron Gordon has the opportunity to kind of play more freely, where he doesn't have to be the dunker. The thing that I love that he's added to his game, he's actually got a real back-to-the-basket game now, right? In Orlando, it was the I'm going to spin off you and dunk on you. Now I see him. I like the footwork that he has. I like the back-to-the-basket game that he's added. I think that he could be a real name that they go out there and – or he could be a guy that goes out there and really makes a name for himself And I don't know if he's going to cement himself as the number two, but you know what he could be? He could be the Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly what he could be. The Andre Iguodala for this Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, he's not winning finals MVP. I'm sorry.
No.
Shutting down Jimmy Butler isn't the same as holding LeBron to shooting percentages that are lower than normal.
Yeah.
No, what a weird finals MVP. I still look back at that.
Is it, though? Here's the weird part. Is it, though? Jimmy's going out there shooting like 56% every night. If you hold him to 35, it's not bad.
Well, he's averaging like 26 in this Celtic series. One more. A couple weeks ago, you and I had a podcast entitled, Is Denver Doomed?
Yeah.
I'm going off the board in this one. Can Michael Malone prove to you he can be a NBA Finals winning coach if they win the finals?
Here's the funny part about that. I had somebody tweeting me today talking about, I don't remember you guys, or maybe I don't know the definition of doomed, but we don't look too doomed. Didn't remember that was the title of the podcast. So
you laid down the hammer and were like, as long as Michael Malone is the coach of the team, they will never win the fight. And I was like, oh, dang. And so I was like, doomed. And so I editorialized the title for sure.
Yes. Yeah. I will say this. I am not one of those people that comes on these podcasts and sits there and wants to be right all the time. I like to be proven wrong. Based on what I've seen from Mike Malone in his history, I've seen a coach who hasn't put his players in the best position to win. What I saw from Michael Malone in the Los Angeles Lakers series was a coach who won the chess match, and he really, really impressed me. Because Darvin Ham, here's the wild part about it. Darvin Ham didn't do a bad job. No. I liked a lot of the adjustments that Darvin Ham made. I liked how Darvin Ham tried to change things up, tried to put Anthony Davis in better positions, tried to give LeBron James a little bit more of a break and then allow him to. I thought that Darvin Ham coached a really good game. I thought that Michael Malone outcoached him in a way that we've seen Eric Spoelstra outcoach, not to the same level as Joe Mazzulla, but how we've seen Eric Spoelstra be that guy that, I'm going to win this chess match at the end of the day. I'm going to have, even if I don't have the better pieces, I'm going to have the better pieces. So I will move off of the point that they are doomed. I don't remember saying doomed, but if I said
doomed. You just said they will never win a title with Michael Malone as the coach. That seemed doomed.
I've not been a believer in Michael Malone ever since I saw how he played Jamal Murray in so many games. Like there were games where Jamal Murray would cook. And then by the end of that game, or the next game, or a couple games later, he would let Jamal Murray play like 22 minutes. I'd be like, what the heck happened here? So prove me wrong. I am okay with getting proven wrong. I guarantee you I will come on here and give my same opinion. And if I'm proven wrong, I will give credit where credit is due. Mike Malone, if I was wearing a hat, hats off to you, bro.
Coming up. Count it up. Where we count out the most interesting, fun things in the NBA, including LeBron James retiring, Mark Jackson on ESPN. Talk about that and more coming up. All right, Pat, it's time for this third segment every single week, the game that we like to play.
Count it up.
LeBron James and his post-game press conference, exit interview, I don't know what it ended up being, hinted at retirement, saying I could be done with this game. I've got a lot to think about, blah, blah, blah. Let's make a percentage wheel. Give me a circle graph. What percentage of LeBron saying that he's hinting at retirement is really thinking about retirement? Like actually thinking about it? What percentage of it is putting pressure on the front office and the Lakers? And what percentage of it is just his narcissistic need for attention? Give me the wheel here.
Okay, I don't know about chart. I'm going 8% on the last.
Here, I'll give one more category.
I'll go 10% on the last.
I'll give one more category. Wanting to take the attention off of getting swept. Because a Western Conference executive said that yesterday.
That's a good one. I'm not going to lie to you. That's a good one. I will give a 10% chance to the narcissistic part.
Need for attention, yeah.
I will give it that.
Because it's 10% need for attention. 11%.
There is some need for attention out here.
5% concentrated power of...
Okay, all right. Relax there, bud. I saw where you're going there. I would say... I don't even remember all the categories.
He's literally actually thinking about retirement.
I would say that there's a 50% chance that he's actually thinking about it.
50%?
Here's the reason why I say that. Because we saw LeBron James for the first time ever, while he's still one of the best players in the NBA, one of the top 15 players in the NBA, 100%, not look like LeBron James. And that, I think, will weigh heavy on his mind. You've heard a lot of players talk about that in multiple sports where they said, I didn't go out there and feel like me. I didn't go out there and do the things that I will be able to do. So I think that that will actually weigh heavily on his mind in the offseason, but I think that he will absolutely lean the other way. I think that he'll come back. I do believe that he'll play, but I think that I guess 50 might be too. Let's go 40. I'll go 40% on that.
The other ones are putting pressure on the front office.
10%, because I mean it is what it is at this point.
You don't think you don't think he was using it as putting pressure on the front office?
I don't think there's much that he can put pressure on them to do. What are they going to change? It's still AD. It's still LeBron. You're coming into the next season with that, no matter what.
Okay,
you gotta go get somebody. Like, who you getting?
And so you're putting 40% on taking the attention off of getting swept.
I will put 40% on that, yes, because I do think that there's some kind of a ploy in that where he literally just goes, hey, dog, like, y'all not finna talk about me all offseason getting swept out here. Which I like how some of the people are friends. Listen, I'm a Jordan fan, clearly. Bulls over there. I like how Stephen A. put it, where he's like, Michael Jordan has never been swept in a 7-game series. And I was like, that's a heck of a way to slant that, because he's been swept at a 5-game series twice.
Yeah, they just right. Didn't have that. Gotta get the qualifier in there.
They just didn't have that in there. But shout out to Stephen A.
There you go. That's LeBron. I may post those pie charts somewhere.
Somewhere.
Okay. I'm like trying to think of like, will I do it on Twitter? Will I do it on? I think I'll do it on the YouTube community tab. I'll post it somewhere. The number three post in all of Reddit NBA. The subreddit NBA this week was from a very concerned ESPN viewer that said, ESPN, if you're reading this, please, we're begging you, no more Mark Jackson next year. And went through this whole thing about how they hate Mark Jackson on the broadcast. My question is,
count it up.
Who likes Mark Jackson on the broadcast anymore, and why does ESPN keep putting him back up there? Hand down, man down.
I don't know. Mama. Because the tough part is, right, like,
I'd hit her out of the park.
Mark Jackson, that's the crazy one, right? That's the crazy one. Here's the tough part about all of it, though. Like, Mark Jackson, I feel like he used to be more tied to the analytical side of it. Mark Jackson now feels like he's also done with the job. But
he's been out of a coaching job for so long. It's like, you know, Tony Romo wasn't calling as many plays when he was out of a QB room for a while after. Like,
yeah, but I think very similar to what you said with Tony Romo, right?
Yeah,
I feel like Tony Romo got comfortable in the job and was like, okay, I don't want to really do this anymore. Mark Jackson wants to be a coach. The NBA just won't let him. So this is his way to stay close to basketball. ESPN probably will continue to use him. Because
the three is connected. The Mike Breen, Van Gundy, and the Mark Jackson. They're connected now.
Yes.
Even when Mike Breen won some kind of like broadcasting award, like an Emmy or sports Emmy or something, and they were congratulating him on the recent game. They're like, best in the business. You're the best one. Mike Breen was trying to put credit to those guys, and I was like, Breen, you don't have to do that. Like
here's the real question. Count it up. How good's Mike Breen on a scale of 1 to 100 for having to deal with that every game?
100, 110.
Oh my God. Cause it's him. What is it? It's him, Jeff, and what's his name, ain't it?
Mark Jackson.
Him, Jeff, and Mark Jackson. Oh my God. Mike, my condolences for you, bro.
And to go from Clyde Frazier to them is just, I mean, that's.
It's so tough because Jeff is just. Jeff. Jeff's a whole different story.
Talk about man yells at cloud.
Somehow it always ends up being about his coaching days with the Knicks. And then on the flip side of that, it's just like, you know what I hate about the modern NBA? These tennis shoes. It's like, are you doing a Jerry Seinfeld skit right now? Are you doing a Seinfeld skit in the middle of this live call right now? Is that what you're doing?
Carmelo Anthony announced his retirement this week. Shout out to Melo. Stay Melo, everyone. He was asked about not winning a championship in his career, and he said this: "I'm at peace. That doesn't bother me no more. That idea that you're a loser if you don't win a championship, for me, I've won. I won back in 2003, the night I shook David Stern's hand on that draft stage. I made it out of Red Hook. I've won at life. The only ring that I didn't get would have been an accomplishment, but I don't regret it. My question is,
count it up.
Do you look at players differently that retire with no titles now? Because it seems like that it has changed for some."
No, because I didn't look at Charles Barkley differently. I didn't look at a multitude of players that had to go up against Michael Jordan who didn't win rings. I didn't look at Reggie Miller differently. I didn't look at, right, like they were still great players. They just ran up against a buzzsaw in the NBA and Michael Jordan. I feel that same way about players now, but I know that the players now feel the pressure from the social media more than players back then felt the pressure from newspapers and different things like that, right? And so to me, I think that the players care more about the rings, but I think that Melo is from more of that previous garb where, yeah, I might not win a ring, but it's because I went up against the bat. Melo goes to an NBA Finals if Kobe Bryant isn't standing in his way. That was an amazing Denver team. Yep. That was an amazing Denver team. I really thought they might go to an NBA Finals that year. Right, like there's certain things that happen that you don't win, so you have to take the wins in life that you get, and it's not for a lack of trying. I can never say there's some players where I can look at them and I could say I don't know if I think he's in this for like making a lot of money and just chilling, like he likes being an NBA player. Maybe for the end half of Melo's career, but yeah, I'll tell you what, but I'll say this, right? Even him in Portland, I never felt like Melo wasn't trying his best. Or trying to actually go out there and get Portland to the next round. The New York years got a little dicey. I'm not going to lie. Because if you wait a season, you literally get a much better team on your side. Like, I don't know. That's a little
the way he forced his way out of Denver and into New York. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there's a new thing now where there's certain players, if you're on the level right under like the best in the NBA, you take your top 10. And you take those players right under that. Right now, yeah. It's like you're Damian Lillard's. You look at – no one's looking at Lillard differently if he didn't win a title, right? Because I don't think he was expected at a certain degree. I don't even know if we're looking at Embiid that way right now, where like you're expected to win a title. I think Jokic has entered that category right now. We're like, all right, if you don't win a title, we're looking at you differently in your career because you're expected to be there. LeBron, obviously. Yeah. Kevin Durant, obviously, was in that category. James Harden, at a certain point, was at that where we're like, all right, we're looking at you differently if you don't just make the finals because he never has.
When you're, and so when I you're think getting all the regular season accomplishment but not the accomplishments that matter.
Well, you just hit yourself in that next echelon. And Carmelo, his whole career was like, all right, Kobe's there. Okay, LeBron's there. He just had guys that were ahead of him at different points. And then eventually like Steph Curry made it into that. Like you just had guys that were just like Kevin Durant, obviously, that he was never in that next echelon of like, we expect you to win a title. And I think that's kind of like a sweet spot. If you want to be that, like he won at life. And I think he's totally right by that he made it out of Red Hook. He made it out of his neighborhood, made it to the NBA, the incredible Syracuse team. We'll remember him for that. We'll remember him for Hoodie Mello. We'll remember him for Olympic stuff. And it's kind of wild that he's in that spot. And we won't look at him and say, well, he never even made the finals. Well, he never even – he made the conference finals one time. He made it in the second round. Like, we don't hold him to that because he just wasn't that level of player at that point.
Here's the tough part, though. I think that Mello, to me, is the Charles Barkley.
But he wasn't an MVP, though. And I don't even think he was close.
But I think that, well, here's the thing, right? Realistically, Melo should have won Rookie of the Year.
That's fine.
Melo,
it's not MVP.
It's not, right? But there's a lot of accolades that he didn't get because of LeBron James.
Melo got third in MVP once, sixth in MVP once, never got even top 10 other than that. Like, he was just not on that level where Barkley was MVP making the finals.
Right. I get you. But what I'm saying is that, right, he's that player that, like, you can look at his career and you can say, he's one of the best players that I've ever seen dribble a basketball. He's not the best, but he's absolutely one of the best players that I've ever seen dribble a basketball. That's how I felt about Charles Barkley. Even the fact that, right, he gets the MVP, gets to the finals, all of that. If he doesn't do that, he's still one of the best players that we'd ever seen dribble a basketball because of how dominant that he was on the court. So I think that Melo kind of has that in his career where I look at that and I'm like, I think that he has one of those careers that I, but I also don't feel like, right, to me, making the Western Conference Finals is hard. To me, making the NBA Finals is hard, right? Like, I don't look at the Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, OKC team and say, my God, that team sucked. No, they made the NBA Finals. They were better than everybody else in the West. In a West that still had Kobe, that still had Duncan, that still had, right? Like, so I think that I also look at it a little bit different in the retrospect of, if you win all the rings and all of that stuff, shout out to you. You're one of the greatest players of all time. Basically, there's like 12 coaches that have won all the rings since 1980.
Yeah.
It's hard. And only in the NBA do we do this. Nobody does that in the NFL. Nobody does that in baseball. Because they realize it's hard. Nobody does that in hockey. Heck, Toronto hasn't won in 110 years. I don't. It ain't been that long, but still. Like, it's only in basketball we do this. And so I won't hold NBA players to that standard of, you didn't win a ring, so you suck. Maybe it means you're not the greatest of the greats, but you can still be great.
I find the conversation around LaMelo or Carmelo, and I feel
don't
like...
Don't you dare disrespect the real Melo out here.
I feel that same conversation will happen around Lillard at a certain point in a different way, and I'm curious to see what it'll be like, because I think it'll just be celebrated and not talked about like the way we talk about Charles Barkley. So there you go. Tomorrow, got another game. You got... we've got Wes Goldberg, and we probably have Adam Mares on to talk about the Celtics and the Heat. Great stuff on Locked On NBA. Guys, thanks so much for listening to Locked On NBA.
Bye-bye.
Boom!